Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into yet another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nessler, and that was a little bit of the Taylor Scott Band. The Taylor Scott Band takes the temporary stage tonight at 8 o'clock to give us some blues for a drizzly Friday night. Colton Farrell is a six-year-old resident of the Crystal Valley who is battling brain cancer. While the medical treatment he has received thus far has been productive, the Farrell family has a tremendous journey ahead of them, and so now it's time for us to help a neighbor in need. There's a party at the 3rd Street Center tomorrow night to benefit Colton Farrell, and here to tell us about it are Mitch and Kathy Alcala. Hello.
Hey.
How you doing there?
Good to see you, Mitch. Remember to get close to that mic.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Josh Rogan, one of the musicians playing tomorrow night, is here too. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Luke.
How are you?
Great.
Good to see you back.
Thank you.
And joining us by telephone is Corinne Marie. Hello, Corinne.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Welcome to KD&K.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here from a distance.
So, Mitch, tell me what's going on. Let's start with the beginning. Tell us a little bit about Colton, please.
Well, you know, I'm blessed with two sons, 25 and 27 years old, and my eldest son was married last fall, and Colton and his parents were at the wedding. They're wonderful friends of ours, and Colton was he's just a vibrant, wonderful kid in the community, and a couple months later, he took ill. And Kathy and I decided that if it were on our side of the table, we would probably need some help. So we stood up and said, let's make this happen. You know, it's all about the kid and the family and helping them through this thing. They've got so much on their plate that they don't need to deal with little things like tires on the car, utility bills or whatever. So I called on the community, and in its normal fashion, everybody 100% has just stood up and said, let's do this. So we're going to throw a party. It's going to be a party. I've kind of named it a celebration of life in honor of Colton, because this little kid's a warrior and we're just the soldiers behind him pushing. You know, so we're going to have a party tomorrow night. Food, music, beer, wine, spirits, a silent auction, and 100% of everything that comes through the door is going to go to the family to help them in their tremendous journey.
Where is it?
At the 3rd Street Center, 6 to 10.
6 to 10 tomorrow.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Tell me a little about the food. Are they food trucks that will be parked outside?
No, Slow Groove and Barbecue is going to bring in their normal first class.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be meat and carbs and veggies. And yeah, and again, it's all by donation. And then Soper's Liquor has donated more wine than I think we'll drink, but they're just awesome. And we'll have, it's just about having fun. Roaring Fork Beer Company, we're trying to keep it local. You know, I just dug down into the community and I said, right here, we're not in Denver, we're not in Detroit or LA. This little community can pull this off, and we're doing it. We're doing it. So,
And some of the live music you have arranged. We have, as I said earlier, Corinne Marie on the telephone. Corinne, tell me about your music.
Oh, I started playing music when I was 9, and I live up in Buena Vista, so most of my music, I grew up in the mountains. And so most of my music and songwriting is inspired by these mountains. And now I grew up playing Western music and country music, and now it's got a pretty much an Americana feel. So you can expect, if you come to the show, lots of different styles of music and just a little bit of everything for everybody.
Have you played in the Roaring Fork Valley before?
No, I have not. I have to think about the whole area. But, I mean, many, many years ago, we were over in Snowmass. That's about as close as I've been.
Are you coming with a band?
No, just myself.
Oh, okay. You know, I have to hand it to musicians who get up there and play solo.
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy thing to do.
Well, it's not, but, you know, it's for a good cause, and I enjoy it, so it's going to be a great night.
And Josh, you're no stranger to KD&K's airwaves. How did you get involved with this?
Mitch's neighbor.
Oh, okay.
And I also know a little bit about Colton from my wife, Eliza, is friends with his mother. And so the story is familiar and touches my heart. I want to be there to help.
Okay. Can people get tickets ahead of time, Mitch?
Now, you know, we thought about doing the in advance planning thing, and it's just, you know, we're trying to keep it on the KISS theory, you know, just keep it simple. Come on in, have fun. There's no obligation. Some people that have it will drop it, and some people that have it in their heart will show up in spirit. We really believe in prayer, and I think that's what's carried this child this far, is the you know, whether you're into herbs and gems and stones or spirits or Christ. That's how he's made it this far, and that's the energy we're going to pull together tomorrow night. We're just going to have huge energy, and it's going to carry him some more, man.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. What kind of a road does he have ahead of him so far? You mentioned, is he going to the Front Range for treatment?
He's been living at the Children's Hospital. And in the Ronald McDonald House has been helping. If you never believed in that, I never did. I go to McDonald's maybe twice a year, and they got the little basket in front there. And I got to tell you, my whole tone has changed. Those people are real, and that family's been staying there, and it's good stuff. Huh. He's actually home in the Valley this weekend.
Will he be at the event tomorrow?
That's to be determined.
I see.
It's his parents, it's their judgmental discretion, because obviously his immune system is very, very low. So they have to decide whether he wants to be in a crowd or not. And quite frankly, I live under the premise that need not to be present to win. You know, I love these people, and I don't want them to feel obligated to be there. But if they know that there's 500 people behind him just pulling, you know, need nothing more to be said.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. Yeah, that is a beautiful thing. Well, Josh, you have your guitar. I wonder if we could hear a tune from you before you
move. Boy, oh boy.
This is for the Colton family. It's your canoe that makes the waves in my calm lake. Changing reflections of the sky. I'd been wondering why had it changed so much these days. And it'd be me walking across your hot sand in the sun. Burning my bare feet for only one reason. That I've got to feel out your ground. All those days that just seemed to pass on by. Now no longer I'll be getting high off your presence. Now that you're not around, you left me with a frown, but a pocket full of memories. And now I just smile, living in glee, just to say, hey, y'all know it's just part of the good old days. All right.
That's beautiful.
That was wonderful.
Thank you.
I think there will probably be more than a few tears tomorrow night over there at Third Street Center. Huh, what a beautiful thing. Is there anything else you'd like the people to know about, Mitch, about this?
You know, it's a family event. We'd like to have everybody come out. It's just a good, clean, fun thing for, like I said, if anybody else in the community needs something like this, you know, be glad to step up in the future. But this is what we're focused on today. And you know, come on out, have fun. And, you know, everybody that's there is Colton Wins.
Kathy?
I was just going to add to that. We have a wonderful line of silent auction items.
Oh, great.
Yeah, there's about 70 items that have been donated. And so come on out and take a look. And, again, everything 100% benefits Colton.
And all those things were donated by area businesses.
You know, it's really cool. I don't want to sound funny, but the reality is we put together everything from a shopping spree at Napa Auto Parts, which anybody could use, to the co-op. Obviously, they're tremendous in the community. They stepped up with a shopping spree at the co-op. You can buy boots. You can buy hardware. You can buy clothing. Propane. You know, the local trash service, I mean, practical stuff. And we've got guided hunts, guided fly fishing, ski packages, four-wheel drive with hotels.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think it'll turn out for everybody. It's going to be sexy for everybody. And I'm really just astonished on how well everybody in the community from Aspen to Rifle to Marble have just come together and said, yeah, man, let's help this family.
Well, I'd like to take the opportunity to wish the Farrell family all the best. If they've got friends like you, Mitch and Kathy and Josh and Karin, things are going to be okay.
Right on. I can't wait to hear Karin play, and we're hoping to invite her back this summer, maybe to be a part of the magical moments on the Crystal River in Redstone. That would be a real nice treat. It'll be new for her.
Thank you, Karin, for joining us by telephone from
Thank
Buena
you so
Vista.
Much.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Have a great
Thank
day.
You.
All right, stay with me. There is more to come on today's Express Yourself. Well, that was the Dendrites, an instrumental ska band from Denver, and everybody's excited around these parts because the Dendrites play next Sunday night, the 15th, Katie and Kay's exact 35th birthday party at the 3rd Street Center. So get your tickets now at katieandkay.org. It's going to be lots of fun. Tonight is the fourth night of this year's Aspen Shorts Fest, but things just start getting going here in Carbondale with two programs tomorrow and two on Sunday. As of 3 hours ago, there were still tickets available to all four Carbondale programs. You can get all the details on the programs at aspenfilm.org. KDNK's Gavin Dahl spoke earlier this week with Dom Burgess, the writer and director of Sam Did It. Sam Did It screens on Saturday night at the Crystal at 5:15.
Writer, director, actor Dominic Burgess is our next guest on KDNK. Thanks for speaking to KDNK, Dom.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So it's really exciting to have so much talent coming through the Roaring Fork Valley for the Aspen Shorts Fest. So many writers, directors, actors, and of course you have a lot of hyphens in your title because you've been an actor for a long time and now have written several scripts. And is this your directorial debut?
It is, yeah. It's my directorial debut, and I've been acting for 14 years now, but I just wanted to start telling my own stories and getting behind the camera a little bit as well.
Well, we'll talk more about Sam Did It, which is playing on Saturday at the Crystal Theater here in Carbondale. Tickets available at Bonfire for all the Carbondale shows for the Shorts Fest, and more information is at aspenfilm.org. But before we get there, I want to go back in your story, Dom. You were born in England. You've been on tons of shows over the years, which we'll talk about. What was your first big break before you came to L.A.?
You know, I don't know if there was like a big, big break. I mean, I worked on Doctor Who, which was huge for me because I was a huge Doctor Who fan growing up.
Yeah.
But no, I think it's always been, I think acting is always a constant grind, or that's what I found, is it's always about what's next and the next job. And yeah, I still don't know if there's been a big break. Everything's just what's next.
So you came to LA about 10 years ago, and for people who think your voice sounds familiar or your name sounds familiar, people have probably seen you because I think the first place where you really cracked me up was when you were on the show The Good Place. You've done Always Sunny, The Leftovers, yes. Marin. You were on the Emmy-nominated Feud on FX. The Magicians on Sci-Fi. The Flash on CW.
Yeah.
And so what are you currently working on in L.A. as we record this interview?
So right now I just wrapped a feature film called Ma with Tate Taylor, who was the director on Girl on the Train and The Help. And that's a little horror thriller with Octavia Spencer and Juliette Lewis and Luke Evans. And then I'm going to be popping up in the upcoming season of Queen of the South. And this week I'm just finishing up on a pilot for L.A. Confidential, the TV version of L.A. Confidential.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm really excited about that. I'm going to be playing Sid Hudgens, who Danny DeVito played in the film version.
That's awesome. What an honor. And you've really worked your comedy chops for a long time. Sam Did It is I guess you'd call it dark comedy.
Yeah, that's where I kind of sit and feel comfortable is that dark comedic place.
And as an actor, you really deliver in this role in Sam Did It. Tell us about how this came together. You're the writer, director, and you have a big, major, marquee movie star in your short.
Yeah. Well, I wrote it. It came about during 2016, 2017, when I felt like we were going through this whole slew of celebrity deaths that were happening that were really affecting me. You know, we lost David Bowie and Prince and Carrie Fisher and Alan Rickman and George Michael and Anton Yelchin and, you know, these big names that had been a sort of a big part of my youth or growing up, or people whose work I really admired. And, you know, you see on social media people changing their statuses and their photos to talk about how those artists had affected them so much in their lives. And I wanted to tell a story about a celebrity's number one fan.
Yeah,
who finds out about this death firsthand, and is sort of at ground zero for this news to hit them. So yeah, that's I think where it stemmed from.
So this celebrity comes into the morgue, and you play a mortician who happens to be his biggest fan. What do you think? Can we give the big reveal of who your star is, or should we let them wait and see?
Yeah, let's tell them.
It's the one and only Alfred Molina, one of the great British actors. And I imagine for you being born in England and coming of age there before moving out to L.A., that it must have been pretty you must have had the feels working with him.
Oh, Yeah, I mean, he's fantastic. He's the nicest human being and so gracious and so kind.
That's great.
And we were working together on Fuge, and, you know, originally I was writing this thinking, like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to get this into Ryan Reynolds' hands. And then through talking with Alfred and getting to know him, I felt like, oh, you know, absolutely it should be Alfred. And so I very sheepishly sent him a Facebook message saying, hey, I wrote this thing. You don't even have to read. Don't worry. You know what? Don't worry about it. It's out there. If you want to read it, don't say it. Well, whatever. And he very graciously said yes, sight unseen, to the script. And yeah, he came on board and he knocks it out of the park.
What appeals to you about dark comedy? You said you feel sort of comfortable in that terrain. You've done comedy, you've done sci-fi, you've been, you know, in a lot of different types of roles. Sam Did It is, you know, there's some some blood and uh-huh. There's some laughs. So what about dark comedy feels like a natural for you?
Well, I always think it's fun, you know, when you're doing drama to try and find what's comedic in there, or if you're doing something comedic to try and find what's tragic in the situation. So I think, you know, you kind of walk a tightrope of straddling the line of what's comedic and what's sad, and just playing that dance of balancing both of them together, I find really satisfying, because there's comedic. I find humor in as much as I can, unless I have a sore throat and then you don't want to know me.
So Dominic Burgess, writer, director, actor, the film is called Sam Did It, and KD&K listeners can check this out Saturday at the Crystal Theater in Carbondale, 5:15. It's the first of the four programs that Aspen Film is bringing to the Crystal, in addition to all the shows at the Wheeler Opera House in Aspen. So you are going to be here in person for a live, I believe, Q&A at the end of the screening on Saturday?
I will be, yes. I'm really looking forward to it. It's my first time in Colorado, and by proxy, then Aspen and Carbondale.
Yeah, well, KD&K Community Radio welcomes you, Dom, and so excited to have all this talent in town for the film fest. And before we go, I just want to ask you, so this film has played in a lot of short film fests already. It's a local premiere.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that you have a feature film that's going to be coming out. You're working on this pilot, you know, big high-profile projects. But what else do you have in the hopper as a writer?
Well, we're in development for a World War II drama that I would really love to get off the ground. And again, I've sort of rewritten it with Alfred in mind after he casually said, oh, what's in it for me?
Oh, love
now
it.
There is something in it for him. So yeah, developing that with my first AD, Natalie, and who also produced on Sam. So yeah, working on that, and then a buddy comedy that I don't want to give too much away, because that involves a celebrity as well playing themselves.
Sure.
So we'll keep that stumped because we haven't approached them yet.
Well, really exciting. So feature scripts in the works, and I feel like even though you've already been pounding the pavement now for 10 years and you have such an awesome reel and great clips people have probably seen you in, we also kind of are still catching on your way up. So really excited that you took a few minutes for Community Radio. Thank you so much, Dominic Burgess.
Thank you. Cheers.
And we'll look forward to folks getting to shake your hand and check out Sam Did It on Saturday, 5:15 at the Crystal Theater in Carbondale for part of Shorts Fest. Thank you so much, Dominic Burgess.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Yesterday, I spoke with Andrea Brusa, the writer and director of Magic Alps, which also plays at the Crystal at 5:15 on Saturday. And again, as of 3 hours ago, there were still tickets available for all the Carbondale Shorts Fest programs at Bonfire Coffee is where you can find those tickets. So here is my conversation with Andrea Brusa. Joining me now is Andrea Brusa, the writer and director of Magic Alps. Welcome, Andrea.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. This is the North American premiere of your short film at Aspen Shorts Fest.
Yes, we had the world premiere in February at the Clermont-Ferrand International Film Festival in France, and this is actually our first screening year in North America, so we're really proud and honored to be in such an important and incredible film festival.
Do you have further plans to take this around North America, around the U.S.?
Yes, we have. We are, you know, we just basically started our festival circuit last February, so 2 months ago, and we have already festival. We have been accepted at other festival. We can't announce it yet, but yeah, it's going to be around in the United States, in Asia too, and back in Europe as well.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're taking it worldwide.
Yes, I guess the story speaks to an international audience, which was the goal of the short since the beginning, so we're really happy about that.
How would you describe your film? What is it about?
So it's the true story of the first refugee who arrived in Italy with an animal, and it was a goat, the animal. And we were looking to find a different point of view and story angle to tell a story of the refugee crisis in Europe, specifically in Italy. A point of view possibly that could have been inaccessible for the audience. And when we read the true story of the refugee who arrived with the goat and what happened to him, we thought that was the best point of view to show the audience, you know, many of the contradiction of the European welcome system for refugees. And so that was pretty much how we got the idea of the movie.
Oh, so how about that? So it's based on a true story.
Yeah.
It's a rather whimsical take, at least to some degree. I mean, certainly the ending belies that, but we won't go there because we don't want to spoil it for our
listeners.
Exactly,
thank you.
But it's a little bit whimsical, and it's interesting to me that I would say it's a very character-driven movie. Is that your take?
Yes, absolutely. It's basically the story of the encounter between two men. So the Afghani shepherd, the refugee who arrived in the country with the goat, and the immigration officer, Italian immigration officer, who had to deal with the case and to deal with, you know, what we'll do to the goat, because they were unsure what to do to the animal. Uh-huh. So the encounter between these two characters is the core of the story, and it's where the story, where there's all the meaning of the story.
Well, of course, the immigrant doesn't realize how lucky he has it as far as getting that particular official. I would call him a remarkably sympathetic immigration official.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. There's not really much he can do because, you know, the blind bureaucracy just wants him to apply the rules and that's it. But there's definitely a connection between the two characters. That's what, you know, it's very interesting, I guess, on the story.
And it's interesting to me that you didn't draw an immediate moral to the story. You presented a slice of life immigration tale with no leaning in either direction. There's nothing political about what happens to the man or the goat. It's just a human story, isn't it?
Exactly. I incredibly appreciate that you said that, because we didn't want to make a political movie. We didn't want to make a movie, to support a thesis. We just want to tell a story that we thought deserved to be told, and a story that could probably offer the audience a different perspective on such a very over-talked topic, refugee crisis, in Italy and in Europe and Italy specifically. So, exactly. It's just the story of the encounter between two people. Uh-huh. There's no really political, or we just want to tell a story.
It's about 14 minutes long, something like that?
Yeah, it's 14 minutes, yeah.
And 14. How much of your life did a 14-minute film occupy, and for how long?
That's a very good question. So basically, 6 months developing the script, then 2 months of pre-production, 4 months of post-production, let's say 10 months from the moment we read the article about the refugee and the goat, till the end of the production of the movie, once we had the final cut of the movie, it's about 10 months.
And now comes the fun part of marketing it.
Yeah, then, you know, especially for shorts, it's very exciting because then it starts all the festival game, which is a completely different game, of course. And then you can see to whom the story that you have crafted for like such a long time can speak to or not. Because like it's a very specific story, but with a very universal, you know, world theme and emotions. So it's really interesting and gratifying for all of us, for all the incredible people who work on this story. And Amnesty International was a great partner on this to see the great response that we're having pretty much all over the world, because we're being accepted in festivals all over the world. So it's really, really an honor.
So you have 4 credits as a writer and 2 credits as a director, excuse me. And I'm sort of thinking that this is part of your curve of your career as a filmmaker. What on that checklist of skills to acquire or things to do, what does this film tick off on that list? What did you accomplish that you wanted to accomplish with this movie?
So Marco Scotuzzi is my partner. We direct fiction projects together. I work as a screenwriter as well. I'm a freelance screenwriter. I graduated in screenwriting at UCLA, and then I started to work as screenwriter for other directors, both in Italy and the U.S., and then direct our fictional project with Marco, who is the photographer and commercial director in Italy. So we are complementary when we work together, because I come from the writing point of view. He comes from, you know, the imaging and photography and commercial point of view. This was definitely one of the toughest production we have worked on, because you know, especially having an animal on set for all basically on almost all scenes, and an animal like a goat, which is not a very easy animal to deal with.
I'll bet.
considering that he's such a real character in the story, so he has scene beats and actions, specific and tangible action in the story. This was really a tough production for us, and I think it was a great test for us, because we work very well together during all the development stage and on set and on post-production. So we are really both really happy of how the movie came out and the final result of it. It was really a great challenge that we overcome, definitely.
There's one very tender moment between the shepherd and his goat where I discovered that goats purr like a cat.
We didn't know as well. Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. As to the wrangler on set, she was the only one not really surprised, because she was like, yes, of course they do. And yes, they do exactly the same like cat. And that's really one of the sweetest moments of the film, I agree.
Well, it's really refreshing to see a hot button topic like immigration treated so tenderly and so humanely. So thank you for that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And Andrea Brusa, take care. All the best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking with you.
Andrea Brusa, the writer and director of Magic Alps. And don't forget, there are still tickets available for the Shorts Fest programs here in downtown Carbondale tomorrow and Sunday. And you can get those tickets at Bonfire Coffee here on Main Street. Stay with us. More to come on Express Yourself.
What good is sitting alone in your room? Come hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Put down the knitting, the book and the broom. It's time for a holiday. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Come taste the wine. Come hear the band. Come blow your horn, start celebrating. Right this way, your table's waiting. What good's permitting some prophet of doom to wipe every smile away? Life is a cabaret, old chum. So come to the cabaret. I used to have this girlfriend known as Elsie, with whom I shared four sordid rooms in Chelsea. She wasn't what you'd call a blushing flower. As a matter of fact, she rented by the hour. The day she died, the neighbors came to snicker. Well, that's what comes from too much pills and liquor. But when I saw her laid out like a queen, she was the happiest corpse I'd ever seen. I think of Elsie to this very day. I remember how she turned to me and said, what good is sitting all alone in your room? Come, hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. And as for me, and as for me, I made my mind up back in Chelsea. When I go, I'm going like Elsie. Stop by admitting from cradle to tomb, it isn't that long a stay. Life is a cabaret, old chum. It's only a cabaret, old chum. And I love a cabaret.
Wow. Are you gobsmacked? Whew. What good is sitting alone in your room? Well, go and see Cabaret starting tonight at CMC's Theater in Spring Valley. It's the new production of the Sopris Theater Company. And here to tell us about it are Dori Light, the music director, and One Woman Orchestra. Welcome, Dori.
Thanks. Good to be here.
I'm happy you're here. Also joining us is Brendan Cochran, one of the actors, the lead.
Hello.
And Brad Moore, the director, is here too. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, so it's opening night tonight.
It's opening night.
You got the jitters?
Oh, well, you know, in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
You're not one of those that pukes in the bathroom before the show?
No. You know, I learned a long time ago that doesn't really help. it's going to be what it's going to be. So no, I think we're in a really good spot. I'm excited about tonight.
Yeah? What? How so? Yeah.
Well, it just, you know, there are enough things that are going to keep us on our toes and that nervous energy of being in front of an audience for the first time. But it's a great group all the way around. Mm-hmm. It's a good crew, a good cast, and I'm really excited about tonight.
And it's a musical, which is a little bit different for that troupe, or is it? You do one musical a year?
We do one usually every other year.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you know, CMC doesn't really have a music department per se, so uh-huh. it's a little difficult to do that, and you know, with our small stage and things like that. But we try to, in our sharing of the, you know, the whole canon of theater, we really try to share musical theater with the students as well as some classic theater and things like that.
Well, Dori, as the music director, what are the particular challenges of cabaret?
Trying to play all the orchestra parts.
How do you do that?
How do I do that?
You loop things.
You edit a lot. Uh-huh. And we got a great singing cast, and the singers are phenomenal. You're going to be blown away by our leads and our chorus. It's really a fun time, and they're very musical. And it's a joy to accompany them. So they really lead it. They really take it away.
So you're playing keyboards and synthesizers? How's that
I'm playing
working?
A keyboard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see.
Yep, that also has a really decent drum cues for during the show, so I'm constantly going back and forth with that, and it's lots of fun. It keeps me on my toes.
I'm trying to remember. Well, we just heard it. There's a clarinet in there, isn't there?
Oh, there's lots of instruments. There's trombones and trumpets and clarinets
strings, accordions.
Yeah, accordion. But basically our orchestra is the keyboard, a piano sound, and string sounds and drum sounds. That's okay. What we have.
Well, we were talking off air right before we started here about the lyrics of that theme song. There are so many good ones. The one that always jumps out at me this time was, "What good's permitting some prophet of doom to wipe every smile away?"
Wow. There are wonderful lyrics in all of the songs. It's just, you know, and I think what's interesting about this piece is that the original came out in 66, 67, won a 68 Tony Award, things like that. But it's gone through a few iterations, and we're actually on what is, I suppose, the third version of the show, which was completed in 1998. Uh-huh. And so some of the original music has been replaced by other songs, things like that. But the thread of the show is so much tighter now, and there's some new music in there that just mm-hmm. really, it's so heartfelt and so intelligently written. It really is. It's fun to perform because there's just so much there to really get a grasp of and take to that performing heart.
The lyrics to me and the dialogue are provocative and poignant all at the same time.
That's a mean trick.
Yeah, it is.
Provocative and poignant.
And poignant all at the same time. There are moments that are just absolutely lovely, and then there are moments that scare you to death, which is really what it's about.
Yeah. Well, I remember vaguely that it's set in Berlin at the end of the Roaring Twenties, just before
1929, 1930, in
just
Berlin.
Before Nazism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's right at the beginning of the rise of the Third Reich.
So I could see where there might be a lot of poignance in that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, does it have particular relevance or resonance today, Brad Moore?
You know, it really absolutely does.
Tell me.
And I was listening to your last guest when he was talking about, you were talking about just laying a story out there and not trying to share necessarily an opinion or, a viewpoint. And, I think that's what we want to do in really good theater. And I think that's one of the things that this show does. And it does address a lot of things that we're now trying to understand, a sense of globalization, nationalism, what happens when we live in fear, or when we're questioning our own personal goals or needs versus someone else's. I mean, there's a lot going on in the world today that that I think echoes back and gives us a chance to use history as maybe a backboard to maybe bounce some ideas off of and memories, and see what that may play in society today.
So in this cloistered environment of the cabaret, what was it called? The Kit Kat Club.
Yes.
A lot of it's sort of a closed environment, and they're not really noticing the brown shirts and the people goose stepping down the street.
Right, right. There is that sense of that is a place to escape, but it's not a place where they cannot see what's going on in the world. I mean, it comes into the club as well. And I think what's so beautiful about this show and the way that this version is written is that you weave in and out of the club and these scenes, and you really understand how the numbers reflect to what's going on to the people who are just trying to live through the time and the impact of what's going on in the world, and the impact of what's going on to these people who are trying to avoid what's going on in the world, because mm-hmm. it has nothing to do with us.
Well, Brendan Cochran, you play Cliff, who's an American who lands in the Kit Kat Club. Is it sort of your role in the play to open these people's eyes to what's going on? Is that kind of what your character does?
You know, I think Cliff is definitely coming in with sort of the outsider's perspective. And, he's come to Berlin looking to write his novel and sort of find inspiration, and ends up sort of really experiencing the tension in the show, which is sort of between that idea of, yeah, life is a cabaret and we can all go have a fun, jolly time, and then these real serious, hard realities are sort of looming over that and starting to impose themselves. And where does each character kind of fall on that spectrum? You know, are they going to pretend like it's not happening and kind of put their head in the sand, or are they going to really take it head on? And it's interesting to see how each character kind of does that in different ways. And Cliff's sort of there to try and provoke a little bit, but also observe these different characters in this world of Berlin.
And he's also just trying to get through the world on his own 2 feet. I mean, trying to figure out what he wants and what he needs. He's left Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, so that he can write and experience European culture and you know, what that means and where he is. And
must have been an amazing time, Berlin in the 20s.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because this is based on some short stories by Christopher Isherwood, and he called them the Berlin stories, and they're a series of short stories, and that kind of experiencing based on his going to Berlin and you know, trying to figure out what was going on and for him and everything else, and then it was made into a play called I Am a Camera, and then, you know, of course, eventually became Cabaret. But
and during that time, there were a lot of American artists and engineers and creative people going to Europe and seeking out new ways and education, becoming more worldly.
Yeah,
Hemingway and the Fitzgeralds were all in Paris at that
Gershwin
time.
Gershwin, and I mean, a lot of people were doing that, a lot of Americans.
Well, Cliff, your character falls in love with the leading lady, doesn't he? Tell me about your co-star.
So Sally Bowles is played by Becky Levine, and both her and her character are quite a whirlwind.
Are they? Well, that's what you need.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for me, I never saw the stage play, but I saw the movie with Liza Minnelli,
right.
which was the movie that everybody remembers Liza for, of course. But she stepped right out. She was right there with it, wasn't she?
Yeah. And I think Cliff's, again, sort of coming in, not really knowing what he's getting himself into, and she's there to sweep him off his feet and kind of take him along for the ride. So she's definitely full force into that life is a cabaret mentality.
But she's not German.
She's not. She's
British.
Yes.
But she refuses to see what you see about what's going on.
Yeah, so that ends up becoming a pretty central sort of tension between us in that relationship, is that I'm constantly trying to go, no, this is a real problem. We got to address this. We got to face this head on. And it's much easier for her to keep up the partying and stick her head in the sand on that.
And part of your story unfolds at the boarding house, not necessarily in the club. Tell me a little bit about the subplot that takes place in the boarding house.
So Cliff finds a place to stay with Fraulein Schneider in her boarding house, and sort of gets to know all the residents of the house. And we've got a array of characters and a couple different romances going on within the walls of this house, between Cliff and Sally, and also between Fraulein Schneider herself and one of her boarders, Herr Schultz,
who is Jewish.
Yes.
So that's poignant right there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and again becomes another sort of fraught relationship as these political influences sort of are coming down on them.
Right, and Cliff also becomes sort of what he hopes to be is that voice of reason within that. You know, that if you get married, even if something does happen, you have each other.
Yeah.
And it's a dark story. It's drama. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful laughs and great music, but it's also a very moving and touching story.
Yeah. So I can see why it has resonance these days.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
I vaguely remember a kick line on stage that sort of turned into goose stepping.
Is that exists? Yeah.
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 Is that in your production
yes.
too?
Yes.
How did mm-hmm. that happen? Why did that happen?
Well, you know, I think it's just one more opportunity to hit on what was really happening in those days, how one can so quickly turn into another, how one way of, or one lifestyle, one way of seeing things can so quickly morph into something else. Mm. In our production, and I don't know that other companies have done it this way, but in our production, we see the MC as being Berlin itself, that he is, his character is the city of Berlin. And so everything that happens within the club ultimately happens to the city of Berlin, ultimately then spreads out to all these various aspects of life and elements of that city and what's happening in the world.
Who plays the MC?
His name is Jesse Monsalve.
Oh, okay.
And he's a recent graduate of our program, but he's also currently a student in the digital design program. So, yeah. He's really wonderful. It's quite a challenge for him because he's from Colombia, and he's having to play a German who also speaks French and English. And poor guy, but he's doing a great job. It's a wonderful cast. It really is. Everybody's just fabulous.
Well, that's great. Before I let you go, let's talk about some of the details. Opening night, as we mentioned, is tonight.
It's coming right around the corner. Everybody's out there scrambling, trying to get ready.
What time is that happening?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. And then how many performances are scheduled?
We're doing 10 performances. Okay. So it's Friday, Saturday with a Sunday matinee this weekend, then Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday matinee next weekend. And then the final week is Thursday the 19th, and then Friday, Saturday, and then we close on a Sunday matinee the 22nd.
Great. So plenty of opportunity to see Cabaret.
Plenty of opportunity, and you know, come see it more than once. You know, as I said earlier, you know, the idea is that it gives you, you know, that it's a theatrical opportunity for you to engage in some conversation. So come out and see it a couple of times.
Brad Moore, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Luke.
Brendan Cochran, thank you.
Thank you.
And Dory Light.
Thank you.
I appreciate you all coming in. It sounds like a great performance.
Thanks.
Great production.
We look forward to seeing everyone.
All right, let's go out with something from the Dendrites. Don't forget the Dendrites playing a week from this Sunday at Katie and Kay's 35th birthday party. Thanks for listening, and please remember to go out there and express yourself.